So hello, my name is Luke. We are back on the C-Page XX RPG role-playing game designer and publisher interview series. I think this is episode 6 with Ron Edwards.
What Luke is trying to say is that we're in a cubicle of a hotel room that's beige.
Hey, I do this wherever it needs to be done. I've done them in my bedroom.
Well, then how come I'm getting the beige hotel room?
When are you going to come visit me in New York? So, Ron Edwards is the author of Sorcerer, Troll Babe, It Was a Mutual Decision, Elves, thanks for the cue, and Spione. Excellent. So Ron, Sorcerer being your first design, had a bit of an epic design process. It's kind of a legendary design process at this point in the community. And Spione, also, from what I know, had an equally epic, not quite legendary yet, design process. However, how is Fiona different than Sorcerer?
The first place to start is that I wrote it from a different part of my life.
Interesting.
In other words, Sorcerer was written out of my role-playing history and my love of a literature and a kind of story that I'd been deeply involved with all my life. Much of it was sword and sorcery pulp, but much of it was also modern, surreal stuff, and myth in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So Sorcerer arose out of the broad range of my interests in literature and life experience, and also out of role-playing.
Okay, so how's Fiona different than
that? Fiona is different because although I sat down to see if I could work up a little game that might use some Cold War spying as a context, and I had a couple of kernels of ideas, you can see those kernels back in my narrativism essay with the little sort of proto game I included with it. And I looked at it and said, well, you know, if I ever want to work this up, I might as well read a spy novel or two. And I'd read a couple of spy novels.
Mm-hmm.
And much to my shock, I discovered a body of literature and nonfiction and also personal connections, either of mine or of people that I knew, that suddenly just opened up a huge world of political context and of literature and the power of certain kinds of stories that, again, I look back on many books I had read in the past but had not realized what I was brushing up against when I read them. And, in fact, I'd read, for example, one of my favorite novelists. It's Anthony Burgess. And he actually wrote several books that are quite strongly centered upon the British Secret Service. But only one kind of makes it clear that that's the case. And only now do I look back and realize that I kind of brushed up against a large topic that he was clearly very versed in and was commenting on. But that's not really the point. My point is not what I realized I brushed up against in the past so much as what I realized was opening up more explicitly in front of me.
Sure.
And this was not a matter of writing a game anymore. I needed, for a number of reasons, to enter this this literature and this way of interacting with other real people so that I would find out more about these things for my own sense of urgency. And then that led to, and then since I had begun kind of the idea of writing kind of a game about this, that stayed as part of it. But I realized that I didn't want to write another role-playing game with a setting. What I wanted to do was to write a book about this topic and use aspects of what we've all been learning over the last 10, 15 years, in particular, as an interactive way for other people to engage with it as well.
So it still sounds to me that the development process for Sorcerer and Spione were rather similar. It sounds like you came from a gaming standpoint on both of them, and a literary standpoint on both of them.
That is definitely correct, but I would also say that the difference was that Sorcerer can be traced to extremely explicit experiential roots that go that are scattered throughout my life, whereas the roots in Spione were invisible to me. until I entered into the literature. And so it was a very sudden thing. It was very very midlife thing, I have to say.
So you
at about age 39, 40.
So when you began the sorcerer process, you could look back down the road that got you there.
More than so. I mean, I was in touch with the road at every step.
Right. I guess you were still on the road.
Yes.
Right. And yes. With Spion, you didn't realize you were on the path until you had forged a bit of a way down it.
That's right.
Interesting.
And looking back, it's actually a bit shocking. And I think that's the case for a lot of people. They say, oh, well, you know, that Cold War stuff, what does it have to do with me? I never cared, you know, blah, mm-hmm. blah. And then I ask them a couple of questions, and they're kind of like, oh. So, you know, it's kind of interesting.
Sure.
And I don't really want to go into that here, because that's like a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, as I say, I decided I could go one of two ways. I could either go the whole European board game style thing, which is actually exemplified right now by what Eero has done,
mm-hmm.
And then have a very much a tactile game be the product, and then have the content, the literary content side of it, be a very secondary thing or something that would get you to. Or I could write a book where you experienced a book,
mm-hmm.
and then decided whether you were interested in the game or not.
So,
and it really, as for me, that was the process that was so different from Sorcerer.
Right.
Sorcerer was a role-playing game,
right.
period. I knew what it was. Part of the process for Spione was even just saying, what is this thing I'm working on?
Sure.
And I had to choose.
Sure. So Sorcerer, just to back up slightly to touch on that, Sorcerer is a very traditional role-playing game with some great twists. But Spion, when you and I first talked about it, you disavowed it as a role-playing game.
There are some... I think it part has to do with the fact that role-playing is a legacy term.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, it is applied to things that it's been attached to all along, and then there are qualities that one might find in role-playing that you can find in other activities that we don't call role-playing, and
mm-hmm.
then there are things that we call role-playing which don't have those qualities. And so, as I say, it's a legacy term, and as such, it's very difficult, therefore. My saying it's not a role-playing game is not definitional. It's saying that in the context of role-playing games, if I say that...
No, thank you.
In the context of role-playing games, if I say that, they are... It's going to communicate certain things. It's going to communicate, for example, that the principal characters, what I'm calling principal characters in Spiona, are player characters.
Okay.
They're not.
Okay, great.
And so there are two spies in every story of Spiona, no matter how many people are playing.
Great. Oh, we're going to pause just 1 second.
Oh, okay, thank you.
What is it?
I didn't know I needed this.
Oh,
okay.
Well. You know what? The rest of us did.
So to back up, so there are two spies in each Spiona story.
Right, and the point is that it doesn't matter how many people are playing, and they are pivot points for the story in action.
Mm-hmm.
And their presence is basically a destabilizing thing, both for themselves and people who are close to them, and the spy operations themselves, of course, never go as planned, because they just don't. And therefore, their presence in Berlin is pivotal. But we don't necessarily need to treat them as protagonists.
Sure.
Nor are they necessarily played. One person at the table per spy is accountable for the spy's actions,
mm-hmm.
but is not necessarily the person who makes up most of those spies'
actions. So once the spies are on opposite sides of the Cold War?
Absolutely not, necessarily.
Interesting.
Any one of the seven agencies that I describe in the book, which themselves are only the major ones in Berlin, you could have upwards of 30 spy agencies active in Berlin at any time
mm-hmm.
during the Cold War. But what you do to make a principal is you pick one of the operations, which is necessarily done by a particular agency, and then you pick one of the people who are available and you put them back to back.
So if you permit me to reach a little bit back to Sorcerer, so in Sorcerer, just for the folks at home in TV land, you play a sorcerer who is bound to a demon. And they serve one another's needs. Throughout the course of play.
Yeah, although it's not as mutualistic as you just described, but yes, go on.
I meant that in the most awful connotation possible.
Sure, go on.
This relationship in Sorcerer, it sounds like you've refined it almost conceptually in Spion, where you have two acting entities who are using each other to get what they need.
That applies to the relationship between each spy and his or her handler.
Okay.
But the two spies may never encounter each other and are not necessarily opposed in any way.
But
they're both just present. Having two present means you have two rocks thrown into the pool, which makes things more interesting rather than just one.
Okay.
The other thing I wanted to point out is that Sorcerer, as I think has been made as clear as I possibly can, especially in the third supplement, clearly the demonic demon sorcerer interaction in myth, literature, pop culture, etc., has a very strong real juice that it draws upon, which is a relationship that is unequal. Mm-hmm. And whether the individual who is subordinate has more power or not over the other is a very touchy question, particularly when disproportionate power,
mm-hmm.
in one direction or the other is also involved.
Sure.
So what I'm driving at is that Sorcerer's fundamental metaphor, which is so fundamental that you can find it in all cultures, all pop cultures, all mythologies,
mm-hmm.
Is working off of human relationships that are imbalanced. So therefore, Spiona is not very hard to say, oh, well, you're dealing with the issues of the imbalanced relationship. Oh, it's like Sorcerer. Well, that's true, but it's not necessarily profound because there are many different things besides spies in which unbalanced relationships are a fundamental part of the story. So, I mean, we could go quite easily to romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were to make this romantic comedy game, I betcha you could say, oh, well, that actually's got demonic qualities like in Sorcerer. I'm not saying everything refers to the Sorcerer thing, but a lot of things do.
Well,
so, you know, I agree that that is, for me, as an author, and you can tell, I mean, look at it, it was a mutual decision.
That's where I was going.
You can tell that as an author, for me, disproportionate power and also flip-flops of where it lies,
mm-hmm.
In the context of charged human relationships is clearly a huge thing. You can go to my gamest game. You can go to my funny game, which are the same thing, which is elves.
Elves,
and
right.
You're going to find the same thing.
I was going to ask that too.
It's certainly the case. Trollbabe is actually an interesting example of it.
Is Trollbabe an exception?
Not necessarily, but it puts a spin on it in which you have a chance. You are in a position of deciding whether you are powerful or powerless, or if since your character is powerful. Are you going to use it in ways that hurts the people close to you or not? And I just gave away Trollbabe, by the way. and particularly,
excellent.
Right, because it's hard in a lot of cases, and I say regardless of the gender of the person in question, it's hard for people truly to match the concept of power to their image of woman. And so therefore I'm putting that in the character, in the player's lap and saying, you know, I want you to play this powerful woman powerfully.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do?
Mm-hmm.
How do you do at it? You know, and of course, you know, there's a lot of power available through developing relationships, but it's hard on the relationships in Trollbabe.
Sure.
So it's interesting. Yes, that is a fundamental feature of my creative side.
Great.
That phenomenon.
All right, so I'd like to move on to the next step then. Do you still play Sorcerer?
Quite a bit. In fact, the last game I played was in December in Hamburg, which is, as far as I'm concerned, it's been too long,
mm-hmm.
you know, since then. But it was posted about on the Forge by Frank Karsikowski,
mm-hmm.
and was an extremely satisfying game. I am, as time goes by, and I'm speaking for myself, Sorcerer has more and more and more to offer, and I strongly think, and this may be just blowing smoke up someone's ass is bad enough when it's your own, that's worse, but what I'm really trying to say is that I think Sorcerer is not a game of historical interest.
Uh-huh.
I think it is a game of present and powerful interest. Many people who have played it once or twice, really probably would do well to revisit it, because I think it's waiting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got stuff.
Excellent
for you.
Do you play Shibiona?
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't film it as much as I wanted to, just because I'm lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to get back to doing that, because the only films up right now are actually playtests.
Right.
And so yes, I do, and I enjoy it also a great deal. There's a lot of pleasure. Well, you know, for me, with visiting Germany as often as I can and other places nearby, I'm spoiled. I really want to play with Germans a lot.
Uh-huh.
And so therefore it tends to, you know, here in the States, I tend to say, well, let's try this game I haven't tried.
And right.
So I probably should be promoting Shibiona through my own play with a variety of different people more than I do.
Mm.
But I do play it.
Mm-hmm.
And what usually comes from it, I think, is, well, it has a great deal of intimate qualities to it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And people, you know, talk about the story later.
Sure, sure. So just to touch on that briefly and to kind of relate back to what we talked about before, do you ever see any behaviors in your Shibiona play that relate back to sorcerer play, to lessons learned in sorcerer or techniques learned in sorcerer?
Well, I think the main one is that I recognize that there's a big shift in conflict resolution in Shibiona. So the answer would be yes, because it's different. In other
words,
there's a thing that's different, and I only could recognize how I can make it different and good from the lessons learned in sorcerer.
Great.
And, for example, as many people are familiar from games like Hard Time Adventures and My Life with the Master, the announced conflict is what's on the table when the dice hit the table.
Mm-hmm.
The announced conflict is what we use terms for, you know, stakes and stuff like that.
It's, right.
It is, and I personally think that in many ways, that's something that sorcerer really brought home to a number of people, and other people did it independently, but through a variety of things, people finally said, you know what, let's no longer have times when, you know, I fail at something, and then I say, oh, well, I hit him again, or I convince him again. No, you've been there. You know,
right.
You move on.
Right.
And so sorcerer has that announced, okay, what is going to be, you know, what do we know is going to go down?
Right.
Up, you know, when the dice are done, and the
and in Shibiona.
In Shibiona, flashpoints, which is the table wide conflict,
mm-hmm.
basically, the flashpoints that are specific to each principle, but you move into the flashpoint phase when both are in that
mm-hmm.
condition. They are instigated by the presence of conflicts of interest among characters. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But in the resolution system, when it comes up your turn and time and authority of narration,
mm-hmm.
you actually may choose to resolve something else absolutely entirely.
Hmm.
It's still relevant to your character in that scene, but for example, if you're simply trying to keep your obstreperous father quiet, you know, as you get him through a checkpoint or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and through the course of the narration and the flashpoint, it turns out that somebody appears into the situation or whatever, or who is already there has done something, you suddenly, it's your turn in the narration, there's like this great, effective, you know, card thing that you've set up that's going to give you a lot of power in the narration, and all this time you've been thinking, I'm getting my dad through that checkpoint I've been working on for half an hour now.
Mm-hmm.
And, or, you know, all my conflicts with my father, all these things with my father, and it's coming up to him, finally get him through this checkpoint, and he's going to be, you know, away from that particular agency or whatever, it's going to be great. But now, you know what? It's time for that guy to die. And the way the cards are set up, you've got the leeway to do that.
Hmm.
And so what is resolved, although it still has to be immediate for the character, may not be the thing that got you into Flashpoint in the first place.
Interesting. I mean, that sounds quite different than Sorcerer.
Yes, it does. It's actually quite different from a lot of things.
Right.
And in some cases, I think it can be a somewhat dysfunctional thing, but I think I made it fly in the Shibiona. It's a distinction in Shibiona too. The difference of distinct phases of play, where announcement means different things. During maneuvers, nothing is ever certain. Somebody announces, you know, identifies himself as KGB. He might not be.
Mm-hmm.
Flashpoints lays it down. Wham, wham, wham,
uh-huh.
wham.
Uh-huh.
And so there's that difference in those phases that is not the same in Sorcerer. Sorcerer's rises and falls in intensity are usually a matter of pacing, and it's very organic between everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but in Spiona, you have a more formalized distinction between two very distinct kinds of play. Distinction between distinct, whatever. Anyway, there's a distinction between two specific kinds of play. What I'm saying is that with Sorcerer, I learned a great deal about how to make it go in one way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you feel very confident and very, I don't know if masterful is the word, but you feel very good and in your skin in a certain kind of sequence of play and how it relates to the mechanics.
Right.
You can write another game that utilizes that same principle as an assumption. It's really not very hard.
Sure.
Even if other aspects of narration or dice or whatever are different, that is your zone. You're comfortable in it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorcerer made me so confident and comfortable, and it's the right word, because I don't mean complacent. What I mean is that you're like, oh, there's no tension about playing this game, no anxiety.
Sure.
Because I know this, okay, you know? And I don't know what's going to happen in the story, but the motor is running, you know? This is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Now that I think I really get this motor after all, I bet there's a different kind of motor.
Right. You can...
You're free.
Chuck that motor in.
Yeah, for this time.
Right.
And so that is how it related. It related through developing that degree, the whether it's insights or not, it's the sensation of insight from playing Sorcerer many, 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 many times.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes went well, sometimes not so well. That then opened up being able to jump away so drastically with this other thing.
Excellent, excellent. Fantastic. That's exactly what I was looking for.
I don't hear that from Luke very often, and so could you just repeat that? Because I like to hear it. I'm kidding. Go on.
Gladly, but we're
good
we're,
job, sir. What? Good job, sir. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. What?
So I want to move on to the next questions. So these are, I have three more questions to ask, and they're shotgun questions. You can answer them however you see fit. So first of all, do you consider yourself a game designer?
I am that subset of role player that happens to like to design games.
Eat it, Roar.
I'm not allowed to talk back, right?
No.
No. Excellent. So it's that subset of role player that considers oneself a game designer.
No.
No?
So I am a role player who enjoys designing games.
Excellent.
There are no game designers as a category of person.
Mm-hmm.
It's a behavior.
Excellent, excellent. So, do you consider game design an art?
Certainly art with a lowercase a.
What's art with an uppercase a?
Art with an uppercase a is... I'm drawing upon an outlook that I actually don't share, which is that it is of cultural significance, that this is sort of the works of significance to humanity that a given culture and time has produced.
So you don't think games fall into that category?
Well, my problem is I'm not even sure that category exists.
Ah.
But, I take that back. It does exist. I don't think the boundary is clear between just art meaning, which is very similar to the term craft.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the product is a leisure time thing rather than something you need to sit on or eat.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not an expert in all this terminology, but I am going to say that to me, small A art is when we're talking about the craft, and you can call it an art if what you're making is for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Whether this is distinct in any way from capital A art, which is, you know, people start pointing at the Sistine Chapel or pointing, you know, at any number of literatures or things like that. Well, I don't know if there's a boundary.
Hmm.
So I definitely know that what we're doing is in that small A category, and I suspect that there isn't any boundary between it and the capital A. So who knows? Maybe some of us or somebody someday is going to bust out a capital A and, you know, and then people will point at, you know, some game about, you know, octopus demons having sex with fishermen's wives and say, look, see, this, this art is amazing. I was referring to Julia Elmo's Ashcan game, just to pick a particularly obscure setting. But the point being that we don't know, and I don't think we ever know, you know, about that.
Excellent. Well, then you're going to love the last question. So do you consider yourself an artist?
I'm an artist insofar as most or all people can be artists. And if I'm an artist, the artistry is in play. The artistry, the medium is the spoken word. The techniques of the art, if you will, are the organizations of the spoken word. And the dynamics of the interaction about it vary. That's what a creative agenda thing is about, right? There's different sets of dynamics that are going to be informing what we're enjoying about this.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue is that that's, if I'm an artist, that's what's going on in this group art.
Mm-hmm.
And game design is itself a thing within that, a different ideas about how to do it.
Fascinating.
And so, to me, the art of game design is nothing more nor less than attempting to communicate about the art of playing.
Wow. Excellent. Thank you so much for sitting down with me. I really appreciate it. It was fascinating answers, and I can't wait to listen to this again.
All right. I often don't follow up on the discussion, you know, on a posted interview.
I'm flattered. Thanks. We are one, 38. We are one.